the essential virtue of this morning, I think, is brevity. So, take as given, thank you for inviting me, etc. The topic I'm going to talk about was largely theoretical for people in this country, I think, is the question of whether the Gentiles and non-Jewish people we live amongst are considered to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, are they idolaters? Now, this was a topic which fascinated the medieval commentators, and if you want to have a theological discussion, the place to look is the Rambam. The Rambam is absolutely firm that Muslims are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah because they believe in one God, and our Christian neighbours, unfortunately, as far as the Rambam is concerned, are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And at the moment, you can shrug your shoulders because I haven't explained to you why that should make any difference. Within the world of the Tshuvot, various questions did come up, some really fascinating. So, for example, under the Ottoman rule, the decision was made by whoever, the Sultan, I guess, the decision was made that if someone wanted a license for Shechita, immediately before the incision, they had to say a formula which started with the word Bismillah in the name of Allah. I'm not quite sure what else went into the formula. I can tell you, I once had a fairly serious operation, and my Syrian surgeon told me that he'd been getting frummer over the last few years, and he's taken to saying this formula before every operation. And did I mind? And I said, well, since you've been saying the formula, how's it been going? So he said, he hasn't lost a patient since he's been saying the formula. So I said, well, you say it as much as you like then. So the question is, are you allowed to say the formula? And the halachic take on the question is, we have a bracha for shechita, and we don't like putting things in between our brachot and the action that they cover. It's called a hefsek. So the question is, would such a hefsek be allowed? And the person who attends this question is the Prima Gadim in Hilchot Shechita. And he says that this formulation, although it sounds Arabic and sounds nasty, is actually very nice. We're saying that we're doing it in the name of the one and only God, the creator of the world, and there's absolutely no problem in saying such a thing. On the contrary, it's a continuation of the sentiment of the bracha itself. So you can see that you have at a theological level, Islam is very acceptable, and at a practical level, it's very acceptable. Now, why is this so in our faces today? It's so in our faces today, of course, because of the question that was the halachic question, which the government posed to us. They didn't realize they were posing a halachic question when the government said GCSE in single faiths are no longer acceptable. You'll be familiar with the problem. Five schools in Birmingham started training jihadi people to go and behead people in Iraq. And as a result, what the government decided to do is get Jewish schools to learn other religions. Quite what the link was, no one's really caught on yet. But apparently, whatever we do is going to stop jihadis going to Iraq. So we've been told we can't teach Judaism only as a GCSE, and we have to take on another religion. And all the faith communities were given a choice of seven. So this question became a serious shiloh, because the schools went to those schools who have a direct fealty to the chief rabbi asked him formally, and those schools who have an informal connection to the chief rabbi also wanted to know, what did the chief rabbi think? And the poor old chief rabbi was being asked, is Islam, is Buddhism, is Hinduism, is it Avodah Zarah? And which is the, and if it is, which is the least Avodah Zarah? And which one is the one that we had to do? And despite many attempts, I think, on behalf of his office to sort of indicate they weren't really interested in giving an answer, because it wasn't the sort of thing they wanted to splash, a chief rabbi comes out against Christianity, was not necessarily a headline that they were looking for. Nevertheless, they were pressed by the schools, perhaps naively, to come up with an answer that would keep everyone happy. So the obvious answer was going to be Christianity. Now, Christianity is a serious problem, because the Rambam didn't like Christianity at all. So the Rambam kicks us off with a very, very negative view of Christianity. He says the idea that you have a person hanging on a cross with bits of blood dripping down and people actually go up to it and say things, that is actually Avodah Zarah. No way of getting away from it. You are worshipping some kind of idol. So he was definitely against Christianity. The dissenting voice in the Middle Ages was the Meiri. And in as much as we do try and work with Christians, we're very dependent on the theology of the Meiri. The theology of the Meiri goes something like this. The objection to Avodah Zarah isn't necessarily the fact that there's a picture on the wall, a statue. That's all harmless and silly. The problem is that Avodah Zarah tend to lead to immorality. And it's the leading to immorality that we really don't like. This is the idea of the Meiri. And he said, in all fairness, Christians aren't more prone to immorality than anyone else. So you can't really count it as Avodah Zarah. And the Meiri is our tent peg. Tent peg's a good image, isn't it? Is our tent peg, which tells us that Christianity can be relied on. However, most poskim, most modern day authorities have taken the Rambam's line that Christianity is really a dangerous place to be. For example, there's a question which might affect us here. You're giving a shiur in Torah, and you're not allowed to teach Torah to an Oved Avodah Zarah, to an idolater. And as you scan the room, you see someone looks pretty suspicious to you. I'll look upwards. And you think, actually, I don't remember ever seeing this person in shul before. Who are they? And as you sort of focus more, you see a cross hanging around their necks. And you think, wow, I'm not allowed to teach Torah to an idolater. And they've got this cross. They seem to be, Ramosha Feinstein says, do you have to stop the shiur there and then and invite that person to leave? And he seems to imply that Me'ikar Hadin, there is a problem here, but one has to behave decently. And the Talmud Torah is also itself a very important value. So you carry on teaching Torah and you sort of look away from that person or try not to make it too intelligible to that person, however you do that. And the suggestion is that you request of the organisers next time that they disinvite that person, however you do that. But he makes it clear that the virtue of Talmud Torah and the virtue of behaving decently are twin virtues that shouldn't be avoided. And sometimes you do have to you have to find yourself in such a situation. So to get into the that was the question that the chief rabbi faced was. Everyone said we'd like to do Christianity because there seemed to be sound pedagogic reason to teach people the religion of the society we live in. But really, wherever he'd have looked halachically, whether he was looking at the theology at the time of the Rambam, admittedly the Meiri does help, but it's not really a powerful blow with which to attack a Rambam. And on the other hand, the more modern-day poskim, like the Igros Moshe, weren't really going to give him much succor in that way. So I have to say, I haven't ever spoken to him on this. So this is purely guesswork as to, I'm recreating what presumably was the process. There'll never be a tshuva. That would be, you can imagine what the tshuva will look like. You know, this is idolatry. That's idolatry. No one's going to be dopey enough to come and publicize this. So, but I'm purely conjecture. This is purely my conjecture as to what process he went through. So they'd have liked to have done Christianity. Christianity doesn't really work. So the next one down the list was Islam. And Islam doesn't fail on the Avodah Zarah criteria. And then a very, very clever positive spin was put on it to say that we've been dying to teach Islam all along. It's the best idea anyone's ever had. We'll get to learn what our neighbours in the Middle East feel and what's fueling the enmity. And we live side by side with many Muslims. It's going to be a terrific, terrific thing. So that's how the decision came out. I've got no idea how I'm doing for time.
You've got three and a quarter minutes.
Perfect. Let me just finish off. So this is at a level of Very first of all, of theological theory, and it's very wise not to live one's life at a level of theological theory. You end up believing all sorts of strange things. But I did find something which may give a sensible interpretation to this whole thing as to how we can generate cordial and reasonable attitudes vis-a-vis our neighbours. It's very unhealthy, I think, to think of our Muslim, Christian neighbours, for sure, as being some kind of primitive idolaters. They're very much not idolaters, and they're not primitive, and I don't think that's a healthy way forward. So I did find something in the Pirush of Rabbi Yaakov Emden on Avot, which is as follows. There's a Mishnah in Avot, in the fourth perek, the 11th Mishnah, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan Hasandla. In the name of Rabbi Yochanan Hasandla, it says, Kol knisiya shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa lehitkayem. Any gathering which is l'shem shamayim will endure. So he understands from that endurance is a test of the shem shamayimness, the bona fides religiously and spiritually of a movement can be tested by whether it's mitkayem or not mitkayem. Does it last or does it not last? So he says, well, yeah, we have to be honest and we have to look at Christianity and Islam, and they're not doing so badly. Yeah? If the criteria is mitkayem, not mitkayem, one's been going 2,000 years, the other one's been going 1,400 years. It's about time that we doffed our caps. And we said these things, whether on a theological level they're Avodah Zarah, doesn't engage. Whether on a halachic level you have to interrupt your shir, he doesn't engage. But he says, on a level of living side by side, you've got to consider that using the criteria of the Mishnah itself, these two movements have endured. So why is it that we... Well, what positive thing can we say about them that generates Rabbi Yochanan Hasandla's idea? So he says, so Rabbi Yaakov Emden says like this, that both of them grew out of Judaism. There are many other religions, such as Buddhism and Hinduism, which are equally as long. But he says they're not included in this Mishnah. The ones that he uses has a remarkable word. He says, Shloshtenu. I don't know how many rabbis would stand up and talk about Christianity, Islam, and Judaism as being shloshteinu. The three of us together, we have common roots. And the more successful they are, the more they shine an admiring light on the common root. So anyone coming into Christianity or anyone coming into Islam will one day say, well, where did this come from? And will hopefully find a path to at least respect Judaism. So on the one hand, we have to remember the halakha and the technical issues of the halakha. We're not supposed to go into churches. On the other hand, we have a shared inheritance as highlighted by a Mishnah, so it's very reasonable to rely on it. We have a shared inheritance with our Muslim cousins and our Christian neighbours, which can only do good things for Jewish people. If someone becomes a genuine Muslim, I'm not talking about a fanatic, if someone becomes a genuine Muslim, they will one day come to say positive things about Judaism. It's a fantastic idea restricting your speakers to 15 minutes. I've given that share for 2 hours, yeah. And you haven't lost a thing. Thank you very, very much.